Hello, everyone. Get all settled in. Get the mic set up.
You all are having a wonderful evening. Had a good day. It's been fun. It's been rainy here. It's crazy. All right. Let me get this all situated a little bit. I feel like I'm sitting in a hole somewhere. All right. Krista's here. So let me get her pulled up. And I will tell you guys what we're going to do. Hello.
Look at us both in black. What's happening?
I know. It's like we planned it. We're going to call. We might as well wear our best black.
Right.
All right. So let me introduce you to everyone. These are my members who are coming in. And
my members.
I have been promising the Nobius women a grief call for a long time. We have particularly quite a few ladies that have lost husbands in the last year, lost husbands in the last couple years. So I thought what I would love to do is just kind of start with, in case they missed our podcast we did together, just introduce yourself and whatnot, and tell them about your podcast and how they can, find resources with you too. But also give them a little bit of your thoughts behind grief. You see it a little differently and things like that. And then
sure.
Do some questions if you guys want to populate the Q&A. And if we have time, we might even bring someone on for coaching. So
love it.
We'll see what all we're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. So yeah, like Corinne said, I'm Krista St. Germain and I'm a master certified life coach with the Life Coach School. And I kind of came to this work after my husband died. So I had been married and then divorced. And my second husband, Hugo, was just kind of, he was my redemption story, really. He was like proof to me that good men do exist. And I loved him so dearly. And we were traveling back from a trip that we had taken. And we had driven separately because we had left at different times. And so I had a flat tire on the way home and he pulled up behind me in his car. We're both on the interstate, very near where I live. And he being the macho kind of stubborn guy that he was, decided he didn't want to wait for AAA. He just wanted to change my tire himself. And I did not resist that, even though my gut was kind of telling me I should. But I didn't. And as he was getting in my trunk to get the spare tire, another driver with meth and alcohol in his system, I don't even think he hit the brakes. We don't really know. But he crashed into the back of Hugo's Durango, and that trapped Hugo in between his car and mine. And so it was about a 24-hour experience between the time the accident happened and the time and when he died. And so that just launched me into a grief experience that I had never had before, right? I didn't see it coming. I never had it before. Went to therapy, back to my therapist who had helped me with my divorce, which was very useful. There's a lot of value in just telling our story and processing it, kind of making it real in our mind and telling it as many times as we need to tell it. But what I found was that at a certain point, I had told it enough and I was ready to move forward. I was ready to kind of stop, as you would say, stop playing in the poopy diaper, right? Yes, and actually start.
You probably don't cuss like I do. We just call it old shitty around here.
yeah. But I didn't have the tools for that. I really wanted to believe it was possible, but I didn't really know how. And that's when I joined my first life coaching program, which was Brooke Castillo's program. And that's where I learned it, right? That's how I learned how to separate what I can't control and what I can, and how to choose thoughts on purpose and how to allow feelings and how to create results that I wanted. And I loved it so much. It changed me so much that then I became a coach. And so what I coach specifically is widowed moms, that because it's closest to my life experience. And I have a podcast aptly named the Widowed Mom Podcast, but I would encourage everybody to listen to it if you're interested in learning more about grief or how to move forward with grief, because it's, you just substitute your loss, right? Mm-hmm. And as in answer to your question about, my perspective on grief, grief is just the natural response to a loss. So yes, we might talk about the loss of a person, a loved one, but that is not at all the whole story of grief, right? We can experience grief about any loss, any perceived loss. And so it's really just, if we use the model, which I know that your ladies know, you teach them the model, The circumstance is the loss, right? The circumstance is neutral. It doesn't cause our feelings. But the grief is our thoughts and our feelings about the loss, right? Our thoughts, our feelings, and our actions too, which is why it's so individual, because we all have different thoughts, right? For me, losing my husband was horrible. Some women, it's not horrible. Some women may have been in an abusive relationship and their thought about their husband dying may not have been what my thought was. Some of my clients, you know, experienced abuse, or they experienced a lot of, you know, mental instability, some, you know, long-term healthcare issues where they were the caregiver for years, right? So we all have different thoughts and feelings about grief. All of them are normal, acceptable, common, right? Because we have so many thoughts, of course, we have all the feelings, right? So feelings and grief, sometimes people talk about grief and they think, well, grief is just a feeling. No, no. Grief is so much more than that. Grief is all the thoughts, all the feelings. And that might mean sadness. There also might be relief, right? It might mean loneliness. It might mean sometimes joy, right? All the feelings are part of it. And so that's the lens that I see grief from, is let's look at, just like we look at how do we think intentionally about our bodies and our food and our weight, how do we think intentionally about our loss and what we're creating moving forward? Because a lot of us don't have a lot of really useful thoughts on autopilot.
Well, and as it relates to this. So interesting you say that, because, you know, like when you were describing grief and stuff, and you were talking about how, like, the difference between, you know, you probably felt immense sadness and anger and things like that. I've had some clients who have lost husbands that were very abusive to them, and they experienced a lot of relief when that ended. And then they experienced guilt for having relief. And so I love the way you talk about, like, grief is almost, I think it's like the umbrella, and then all the little feelings are sitting underneath the umbrella of grief, like with their own little thoughts and everything. So, and I see that a lot of times, like with, even just with our weight loss and stuff, it's like we feel, I don't know, it's like as you're losing weight, you feel all kinds of emotions, and, you know, and people like to like put like one big feeling word on top of it, and it just has so many different little tentacles that hang off of it. Mm-hmm. So I just like the way you described it. I think it's helpful for people, particularly when it comes to grief, to be thinking about, you know, grief just looks so individual for everyone, and there's no right or wrong way to do it.
Right. And we really do ourselves a big disservice when we compare what we think we know about grief to what we're experiencing in grief, right? To what other people tell us about grief, because most of what we've been taught, it's not useful and it's not accurate. And so we suffer a lot because we tell ourselves that we should be, you know, following these five stages, and we should be, after a year, something magical is supposed to happen. We should just feel better, and, you know, and then we don't feel better. And people are telling us, oh, don't worry, you'll be fine. You know, you're young. Now there's other fish in the sea. And we're like,
not so helpful right now.
It's a lot. No, it's not necessarily, right? Not necessarily. Right.
All right, let's see. Guys, if you have questions, will you make sure that you put them in the Q&A, and then I'm going to read them to Krista. And we have a couple people that have their hands up too. Awesome. We have a lot of people in here. We've got some moms. We've got people grieving the loss of a marriage. Somebody said her husband was cheating. So, like, and I think that's also important. Guys, we're talking like grief is not just losing someone. It's like losing like something that meant something to you, you know. So
any perceived loss.
Yes.
Any perceived loss, which is different from but person to person.
This is Jill. Jill, I did not know this. Well, maybe I did. My husband is 89 and has mid-stage Alzheimer's. I am 61 and taking care of him. I'm grieving now. When he dies, there will probably be a mixture of sadness and relief, but I also will have to deal with helping our daughter, who's 18, with it. His sister is 97 and has end-stage dementia, so they live to be very old, and there is a good chance that he will progress to the point before something else happens. Do you have suggestions for how to deal with the current grief, sadness, and resentment towards this disease, and how much I have to give up for it? while I'm also taking care of him and myself.
Yeah. So always, always, the first thing we have to do is we have to make space for the emotions that are already there, right? We have to learn how to allow and process them. Because most of us aren't taught that. We don't know. We're kind of all trying to avoid them or eat them or, you know, get away from them. And so we really need to learn the skill of, okay, I notice I'm feeling resentment. What is that like in my body? How is that experience? Can I just open up to it and let it pass?
Yeah.
Right.
What is, when you process an emotion, like when you process, what does that look like for Krista? It's something mm-hmm. we've been talking a lot about inside my membership, because I think of all the things that we discuss, learning how to like go through an emotion, it's like people just are like, can you just show me?
Yeah.
Like I have never done it, so I don't even know, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a couple of favorite go-tos. I can just summarize them real quick. So I like to use the word now, N-O-W.
Mm-hmm.
I have a podcast episode on this. So you know how we talk about the now feeling?
Yes. Right,
but literally N-O-W.
Yes.
So N is name it. So this is anger.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We name it. This is anger. O is open up to it. And that means physically, like open your shoulders, open your body, open your mind, open your heart, like really let it come in. Say yes to it. Okay. Give it permission to be a part of your experience. So name, open, and then witness. That's the W. And that's where we go to the watcher place, where we don't start thinking about our emotion. We go to our body and we watch the vibration that's happening there, right? This is anger. Breathe it in. I'm open to it. What does it feel like in my body? Name, open, witness. That's useful for me. That's one thing that I do. Then the other thing that I love is tapping. And I have found tapping to be an incredible way for me to process emotion. It just, when I give myself permission, and I don't know if that's anything that any of your ladies are familiar with or not, but there's an amazing app out there that's free. It's called the Tapping Solution, and it's my go-to.
Okay.
And I'll just give myself permission to feel whatever it is, right? This is anger. It's safe for me to feel it. This is anger. I'm willing to feel it. And I go through all the tapping points, and I just give myself permission to let it be there. And it's, for me, magical.
Yeah. I think one of the, I do more about what you do in your now method. So if, do I have a coach here? If so, will y'all tell me who's here today? I'm always wondering which one of my coaches is here.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get, Judith. Thank you, Judith. Will you go to her podcast and get a link to the now method podcast? Make sure you link it in the show notes so that we'll
sure. have it's episode 3.
Episode 3. Thank you. I do something similar. I kind of teach them something a little similar, but I love how simple your method mm-hmm. is. It's, I do, like when I notice I'm feeling something, the one thing that always helps me is to like know, like first take ownership that I'm thinking it myself. Like
mm-hmm.
this thought's causing it. And then I do more of like, I'm going to breathe and I'm going to figure out what's going on in this body. I think just for me, it's like knowing that I'm creating it and nothing else is always gives me a little bit of sense of control over what's happening versus mm-hmm. feeling like, you know, this feeling is just coming over me and I like I have nothing to do with it. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it has to be any more complicated. We want to make this really complicated and it's not, right? We don't have to stop and like sit there and meditate or be in a, you know, lotus position. Like we just need to, this
out.
Is anger, right? This is anger. I can process it. This is anger. I can allow it. And we breathe into it and we open up to it. And then 90 seconds later, it's usually changed a lot.
Yes. Yeah. I also teach them that whole chemical burn off, like,
yeah.
You know, once a thought has triggered the emotional chemical chain, you mm-hmm. might as well let it process out. It's going to process out no matter what. You can either eat your way through it and just ignore that it was processing out, or you can just let it go through.
And mm-hmm.
that's
really good. Yeah.
I think.
I feel like I didn't finish answering that question though, Corinne.
Oh, it's not resentment. I was going to go back to hers and just
okay.
say, one thing that I was going to just suggest, it says, do you have suggestions for how to deal with the current grief? I think for me, one of the things that's powerful is it's that whole idea of giving yourself permission to feel any feeling that you are. There's no wrong one. You know, it's just what you are feeling. It's that, you know, I think that there's some relief in giving yourself permission versus what we normally do is like, I just don't want to feel this. So we have the resistance there, or we judge, I shouldn't be feeling this. Mm-hmm. I should be doing this. Like all of that. Mm-hmm. That's what I think makes already painful situations really hard. Like that's the hard part to me is when we're layering that on.
That's the clean pain versus we lump on top judgment and then we create suffering.
Yes.
Right. That's the whole difference.
We call it pissing on the diaper.
Pissing on the diaper.
We always say like,
y'all got some good ones.
We got a diaper, but now we're just going to take a piss.
Now we're just going to piss on it.
Now we're a little more casual around here than we are over at the
store. I'm shocked, Corinne. That's not at all what I expected.
I'm sure. All right. Let's see. Sherry says, how do we know that our intentional thoughts are not avoiding the real feelings, stuffing the real feelings?
So like if we're thought swapping, we're trying to get away from a feeling.
Yeah, I think that's what she's talking about.
Mm-hmm. I think we know because it'll feel a little forced. Like it'll feel a little like frantic, like we're trying to get away from something. So we're like, oh, negative emotion. I'll just change my brain. I'll just change my mind.
It's a right? lot.
Versus.
Go ahead.
No, just versus, you know, all humans sometimes feel sad and it's okay and I can allow it. And now that I'm done allowing it, you know, now that I've given it its due, here's what I choose to think with my brain. And it won't feel fake and it won't feel phony.
Yeah, I was going to say the couple of things that I notice is a lot of times I'll catch myself thinking I should be thinking this. I think I should be thinking is a red flag mm-hmm. that you're just trying to get away from a thought instead of like understanding that you have it. Yeah. I think another one is, and actually Brooke talked about this in her podcast today, which is you'll switch to an intentional thought and the old one just keeps coming back,
Mm-hmm.
That means that mm-hmm. you haven't really accepted that one as being okay.
Yeah.
And just watching it and feeling it and then deciding, like, right. what do you want to be thinking? I think that that's mm-hmm. a part of it today.
Yeah. If your thought about your thought is I shouldn't be thinking that, it's a red flag.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Any advice for processing grief when a sibling has passed and there are unresolved issues and lack of forgiveness?
I'd love to know more about lack of forgiveness. So I'm going to make an assumption that you mean you haven't forgiven them, but I suppose it could mean that maybe you think they haven't forgiven you.
Yeah, it probably means the relationship ended on bad terms. Like there was mm-hmm. like, someone passed away while we're still arguing or we're still in disagreement, like somebody's at fault. And
right.
I mean, I think this can go down two ways. I feel really bad because I never forgave them. And now I have immense guilt
right.
for that part, or they never forgave me. And now I, you know,
there's nothing I can do about it. Yeah. Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things that we want to remember. One is that the past it really doesn't have any power over us, right? What causes us pain about our past is our present thoughts about our past. So that means we can change any of them that aren't serving us. But then also relationships still happen even when people have died, right? Relationships are only our thoughts about another person. Relationship with ourselves is our thought about ourselves. Relationship with another person is our thought about that person. So you can change your experience of that relationship still, even if they have passed and you never get to talk with them again.
Right.
So if you want to forgive them for a perceived wrong, you can absolutely do that. Right. And whatever those thoughts are that are holding you back, you just want to take a look at them.
We have, Linda, we have a worksheet inside the membership for rewriting your past that might be really good for you to go back and do mm-hmm. on this. There's also, Linda, the relationships course. We did a live workshop for 2 days. I believe we covered this. So if you want to go through and listen to it through the lens of the person who's passed. It's just like what Krista said. You get to work on a relationship whether they're here or not. I've talked to you guys many a times about how I feel like I have a very close and like, I don't know, frequent relationship with my grandmother. I think about her a lot. I still sometimes cry when I think about her. Sometimes I'll think things like she would be so proud. You know, it gives me this feeling that we're still intimate. mm-hmm. and that we're still connected. And I think yeah. for a lot of us, when it comes to the people who have passed, one of the things we most want is connection, because we feel like the like death has taken connection away. Mm-hmm. And it happened, you know, it's a feeling like all the others. Now, if you got a lot of shit on top of death and grief, you got to work through that stuff, because it will block connection. The story will be, I can't be connected because of all this going on. So I think that that also helps us just doing a lot of that work that Chris was talking about earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. Such a good thing to learn, right? We can feel connected, and we know it's true because we can have somebody right next to us physically living and not feel connected.
Right.
It's not caused by the presence of the person. It's caused by what's happening in our brain. I feel very connected to Hugo.
That is such a good point. So many of them will come in here on another call. We did a marriage call right now. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people bitching about how disconnected they are, not feeling connected to mm-hmm. a human being in their house.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a drop.
If I can feel connected to my dead husband, friends, you can feel connection.
You can do it with the guy in the other room. My husband told me this week after 7 years of marriage that he felt our marriage was a mistake on our wedding night. I'm heartbroken. I realize now that I've been fighting for our marriage for 7 years and he hasn't even wanted to be here. I'm not sure how to process this type of loss. Whew. That's more of a coaching moment, Marianne. I would say we would need to dig into this. The biggest thing is, one, I think is just being willing to be heartbroken, like understand why you are, because you thought one thing and now something else has been presented to you. I think that's a natural emotion to go to. Mm-hmm. So like, don't be in a hurry to fix this right now. I would question though, your thought that you've been fighting for a marriage for 7 years that he hasn't even wanted to be in, you know, like, I don't know if that's like he actually said that, or that's your assumption after what he said, that I made a mistake on our wedding night. So that would be one thing. Do you have anything you would want to add to that one?
Yeah, it's just kind of further to what you said. The reason you feel heartbroken is because of what you're thinking about the marriage. And we tend to assume that negative emotions mean we're thinking negative thoughts or shouldn't be thinking those thoughts or shouldn't be feeling that way. But the truth of it is, you might really want to feel heartbroken. You might really want to think the thoughts that create that heartbroken feeling for you. And that's okay too.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And it's also okay for you to think, like she said, fighting for your marriage. It's like, you were in the marriage. Like, give yourself some credit. Like, you didn't need to know that he didn't want to be there for you for those 7 years. Just show up like with love, and like, don't be like, I don't know, ashamed of that or regretful of that part of you. Like, I think like watching, if you're turning that into a moment to think something's wrong with me, I shouldn't have done that. Like, look for that stuff, but then have that space and compassion for yourself to be like, of course I would be heartbroken. I have a lot of thoughts about this. I thought it was this way. I loved him. Like, I like the idea of us all taking more time to be in our emotions rather than trying to just switch gears all the time. Switch gears on the easy shit. Don't switch gears on stuff that makes sense. All right, let's. Stephanie is here. Do you want to coach someone?
Sure.
Do you want to do it? And let me just be all quiet.
That's fine with me. Do it.
I'm going to get a taste of what it's like to get somebody else other than Corinne up in their grill.
My style might be a little different.
I'm sure it's amazing. I was watching some video of me today from one of our camps, and I was like, whoo, I went after her. I was like, Corinne.
I'm a little aggressive.
I was aggressive. All right. I'm going to mute myself just to.
Okay. Stephanie. Tell me, what's going on? Hi.
Well, my mom died unexpectedly 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And so I actually went through the week of the funeral pretty good, but I got home and the shock is like the thing that's in my way, the whole shock mm-hmm. of it just being so unexpected. Mm-hmm. And so I've been struggling with trying to get past the shock.
Okay.
So I can grieve.
Okay, as though the shock is blocking you from grief?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What if that's not true at all? What if the shock is just part of grief?
Okay. Sure.
How would you be experiencing it differently? The shock that you've got going on right now, how would it be different if you weren't thinking it's blocking your grief?
Right. I feel like I could miss her. Mm. I'm just so bewildered. And yeah, kind of lost.
You feel like you're lost? Yeah.
She's gone, gone, and there's no closure. I was getting ready to go see her in just a few days before she died, and yeah. Mm-hmm. We found out some things that she was doing that had me concerned, that we weren't catching that something might have been wrong. So there's mm-hmm. some guilt mm-hmm. there too.
Okay, so we've got guilt, we've got shock.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we have?
Sadness.
Sadness, okay. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Yeah, and just pondering and mulling over what happened to her and how I can learn something from that.
Tell me more about that.
What happened? Well, my dad passed away 4 years ago, and we thought that she did really well handling it, and all of a sudden her house would be full of candy, but she would never eat it. And then we found out after she died, she was eating it through the middle of the night. One of my aunts had caught her, and mm-hmm. she would be gorging all night long. And so I had a feeling that she was probably eating her feelings and not reaching mm-hmm. out and getting help.
Okay.
And there's a lot of guilt with that, and we didn't catch it. And okay. Afraid it might have contributed to her having a heart attack.
Okay. And you should have caught it?
I wish I would have been able to catch it and mm-hmm. help her.
Okay. So here's what I'm talking about when I say grief is thoughts and feelings, right? Mm-hmm. Lots of thoughts, lots of feelings. So you notice that you're feeling numb and you tell yourself it's blocking your grief, right? You mm-hmm. all of these thoughts creating guilt, should have caught the candy eating, right? All the thoughts creating sadness, all just thoughts, all just feelings. So first we just give ourselves permission to feel them, right? Numbness mm-hmm. is just as much a part of grief as sadness. It's not blocking you. It's part of grief. Right. Mm-hmm. I also believe, and there's science to this, it's not just my belief, but if we were to be able to realize the full impact of the loss emotionally all at one time, it would be a lot, right? Most sure. of us might not be able to handle all of that at one time. So numbness, that kind of like arguing with reality in the beginning and the shock and all of that, is actually a really protective thing that our body and brain are doing for us. They're letting us handle little pieces of emotion in kind of smaller bite sizes. And so if we think that that's a problem, we're actually not really understanding that it's really actually kind of a good thing. And it doesn't mean you're blocked. It just means it's coming in slowly, and that's actually probably pretty helpful, right? It doesn't mean you're not going to make progress. It doesn't mean you're going to, it doesn't mean anything about you or your healing or your grief, right? So just let it be what it is. But then we could start looking at some of these thoughts. I would be interested in the ones that are causing guilt, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That you were supposed to somehow know that your mother was eating candy in the middle of the night.
Right. I think she was eating your feelings and mm-hmm. she was hiding.
Why does that, though? Let's say that's true, right? She was eating candy. She's eating her feelings. What's to feel guilty about?
That we didn't help her through. We didn't help her through my dad's death, and that she didn't reach out and get help when she's always encouraged us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think so that's been the hardest thing to accept.
Okay, so that thought, we didn't help her, is that what's making you feel guilty?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
We didn't know. We didn't know. Actually, we didn't know she needed help.
Mm. Until and you were supposed to have known. You were supposed to have known?
Maybe. Yes. Mm-hmm. I would want to know.
Yeah. All these thoughts that aren't going to serve us pop up. We should have known. We should have done it differently. Like, apparently our brain thinks we are supposed to be psychic, that we should have been able to see into your mother's bedroom in the middle of the night. And I spy mom eating candy and her feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of not very fair.
Caught it and didn't say anything either. There's some guilt about that too. Yeah. She caught her doing it.
Oh, is your aunt mm-hmm. feeling guilty?
I don't know. I think so.
Okay. Or are you feeling upset with your aunt?
No.
Okay. So this is what I'm talking about. We allow the feelings to be there, but then we look for the thoughts and we start poking holes in them, right? Because we can believe that we didn't help her, but I bet mm-hmm. we could also find a lot of evidence of how you did.
Right.
Right? It's two sides of the same coin. One side makes you feel really guilty and one side makes you feel something different.
Absolutely.
And we get to decide which one do I want to keep thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Which one serves the result that I want to create in my life?
Right.
Is it possible that maybe you did the best you could with what you knew at the time?
Yes. Yeah. I think that this whole thing kind of brings those other feelings up and you forget the mm-hmm. good things that you were doing mm-hmm. because we did help her through and I know we did some good things. My sister and I did.
This is not just for you, Stephanie, but for something I think it's useful to everyone. The brain tends to get really blamey after mm-hmm. a loss. And I actually think that in some ways that is useful. Because if we have someone to blame, even if that person is ourselves, the emotion we create, guilt, anger, actually feels somewhat better than some of the other emotions that are lower on the emotional scale, right? If we have to accept that bad things just happen and we don't know why, when what we thought was that good things happen to good people, and now we have to accept that we really don't know anything that we thought we knew, right? And now we feel like completely untethered.
Mm-hmm.
It actually feels better to be angry. It feels better to feel guilty. It's familiar.
Mm-hmm.
As compared to like, oh wow, I apparently know nothing. I have no one to blame. And we feel so powerless to be able to point that blame towards someone, ourselves or others, feels more empowering than to accept that we have no power. Right. So I see a lot of blaming thoughts, my point, right? Mm-hmm. It's so, so easy to just focus on how we did it wrong or how they did it wrong.
Right.
And we feel more powerful doing it.
Right. I know when I get sad, when you say that, my brain does search for something to land mm-hmm. on. That's usually where it's been landing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what if there was just nothing any of us could do about it? It was always supposed to be this way. Well, there was nothing that would have ever changed how it is.
I've thought about that. Actually, and that's a hard one to settle on mm-hmm. and be okay with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why the brain will go to, it's someone's fault.
Mm-hmm. And what could we have done?
And what could we have done? Because it's easier to accept fault or find blame than to accept mm-hmm. that it was always going to be this way.
Right. You're absolutely right. It's a lot easier. Not fun, not easy either. But.
None of it's easy or fun. None of it's easy or fun. Corinne, do you want to add anything?
No, I thought you did great. I loved it, honestly. The one thing that you said that I was sitting there thinking was when you were reminding her of her, or Stephanie, her thought, you know, the blaming thoughts and stuff, and how we could find evidence of other things. I was sitting there thinking, you know, sometimes our brain just needs help. Like, it just doesn't know what to do. So it needs us to remind it, like, I know you're hurting and I know you're scared and I know you're trying to make sense of it. And so you're going to the land of doo-doo to get there. It's like, mm-hmm. help you. Let me remind you of these other things too. So I like the concept of sometimes my brain just needs me to help it along.
I love that.
Yeah. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Alrighty. I love your eyelashes.
They're real. It was mine.
I was engrossed in those eyelashes.
They're mine. They're all mine.
That's awesome. I wish I these are fake.
I know. Right? Right.
Sherry said, is there a book I can read about not being disconnected after death? I've never heard the theory that relationships are thoughts rather than the physical day-to-day contact and feeling connected after death. I don't know if you have a book, but Sherry, if you do that relationships bonus course we have inside, we explain the concept of relationships happening in the thought bubbles. So that, you have anything?
I would just say, Sherry, Google continuing bonds. And I don't have any particular book, but the theory of continuing bonds is that, you know, bonds can continue after death. And that might lead you to some interesting places there, because really it's kind of what we're saying.
I think this is an interesting question. What do you suggest for healthy processing of the loss that was abrupt and shocking for all? And the reason why I think it's interesting is because I think that we're trying to, we had this happen at an event a few years ago. I was coaching someone whose sister died of a long death process. Mm-hmm. And in the room, we had someone whose father died suddenly. Mm-hmm. And each person, basically, it was like, no, it hurts worse this way. If mm-hmm. it would have happened your way, it would have been better. Mm-hmm. And I think that what this is, I would love to hear you speak on it, but I think there's an idea that this kind of losing someone is way worse than losing somebody along these lines. Like,
yes,
the uselessness of the thinking, I think.
Yeah, it's like a one-upsmanship of my pain is worse than your pain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and really what I think is it's completely not useful, because what it creates is just more pain.
Yeah.
Right? Now, like, not only do we have the original pain that we had, but now we're, like, you know, mad about it, that somebody else might dare say that their pain is worse than our pain. So now we've got the initial pain, plus we're pissed.
Yeah, well, and there's...
Or, like, justifying it.
Or this, even this being upset with ourselves that, or like, I think it's also the idea, I think, cause I think that's what happened at our event. It was, we got through it and it was hilarious at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But like in this case, I think for me, I'm sitting there thinking I don't think that getting through a loss, whether it was long and drawn out, you knew it was coming, or sudden.
Yeah.
Loss is just felt. Like, I have this theory that, feelings just feel the way they feel. They're very, they do not discriminate. Like, if you feel grief, you feel remorse, you feel sadness or whatever, it just feels that way in your body. Your body doesn't know, like, oh, wait, this is sudden sadness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think what happens is when you have a story about it being abrupt and shocking, and then that creates its own level of feelings and stuff. So I think that's what she's kind of asking. Like, do you see what I'm
thinking? Well, yeah. So just going back to what you said, like, pain is pain. And if we can just decide that all pain is painful, and we're willing to feel it until we process it.
Yeah.
Right. And so to tell ourselves that it's worse in this situation than it is in another doesn't actually help us process it. It just adds on additional suffering.
Right.
And it overcomplicates something which doesn't have to be so complicated.
Right.
This happened. It hurts. And I'm going to allow it to hurt. I'm going to process the pain.
Yeah. I think that it's kind of like sitting there and spinning out, and there must be a different process for this type of loss versus this type of loss. And it's like, no, it's, you know, at the end of the day, sadness feels like shit.
Yeah. That's right.
It's the same way, whether sadness came on fast or sadness came on slow.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know,
yeah.
I think that's,
yeah. I watch that. I'll sometimes see in my Facebook group, or sometimes people will comment on, you know, Facebook posts, and Lord help the divorced woman who comments on a thread of mine about how she's going through a divorce and how hard it is. And I'll watch her get attacked. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's really just not useful or fair. grief is individual. It is caused by our thoughts. It is no less or more painful to have one kind of loss than it is another, right? And there is nothing to be gained from saying, my grief is worse than yours. Mm-hmm. It's nothing.
Right. It's not even good for you. I mean, if you think about how you feel when you say that, there's this like, I don't even know the word, like a yuck inside of you to be mm-hmm. like, you need to
indignant
know.
Indignant and like justified. And
yeah. And those are greasy. Just
greasy.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
Good. You know, it just feels like, All right, let's see. My husband was just diagnosed with cancer that does not have a great long-term survival rate. I find myself already grieving him, and we don't know what our future is. I feel guilty for having this thought. What are some thoughts I can begin to work on to redirect my brain?
Away from guilt?
I think that's what she's wanting to do. I think she's, I think she feels guilty for already grieving him. Like, The outlook is grim. You know, this has not got a big survival rate. I'm already grieving, and now I feel guilty for pre-grieving, essentially.
Yeah. So, first of all, it's good to just kind of normalize it, right? There's a name for it. It's called anticipatory grief. Mm-hmm. It's common enough that they came up with a name for it, right? So to tell ourselves we shouldn't be thinking and feeling those thoughts isn't going to actually make anything any better, right? We're just going to create suffering out of pain. So the more useful self-talk is whatever I think and feel is okay.
Right.
Whatever I think and feel is okay.
I think that that's a perfect answer because there's just, I think we all get hosed when we continue to judge how we're thinking. Mm-hmm. Like that tends, like almost every one of these questions, it's a lot of questions of, I shouldn't be thinking this, or how do I quit thinking this one because this one's a bad one, or this mm-hmm. one's doing this to me. It's like, guys,
right.
literally no thoughts that are wrong. There's right. just thoughts and feelings that come along for the ride that you right. get to look at, you get to examine, and you get to decide how long would I like to keep this one? Some of them I like to hang on for a long time. It took mm-hmm. me a long time to, you know, stop saying, I wish my grandmother was here.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I still have that.
Still say
years
it.
Years later. Yeah. But I finally, at some point, decided that wishing she was here was really painful. And I wanted to, like, in those moments, I wanted to start switching gears to, she was a badass bitch. I loved her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I'm thinking about her. She is gone, you know?
Yeah, you could also, though, decide that she is here.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a bajillion ways to think about it. But it's like also, I think sometimes you have to have some compassion with yourself that you're not ready to let go of it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're like, when you say, I'm not ready to let go, you that means you are ready to feel the emotion that comes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you want it to go away so bad is saying, I don't want the feeling that comes along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's really useful to do models with the feeling in the C line. I do a lot of those models. So, right, it kind of violates the basic 101 rules of what a circumstance is.
All around here.
Perfect. I'm so glad to hear that, right? But like, I notice I feel guilty, mm-hmm. right? For the woman that you were just asking about. I notice I feel guilty. That's the circumstance. And then her thought about that, like, I shouldn't feel guilty, right?
Right.
Or whatever it is. But we really want to look at our thoughts about our feelings.
Right. I think that that's super useful, especially for people who are in grieving and like feeling a lot of this. I think another one that I watch a lot of you guys is shame around urges. You want to mm-hmm. like, you have like shame about shame. You know, it's like thinking about your feelings, like put some of the feelings on there that you're most resistant to. Put them up there and it's like, this is happening. And now how do I think about that? Because that level of thinking you have will either open you up to the experience of the feeling or it will close you off and start a fist of cuffs. So,
yes. Yes.
Let's do one more question and then maybe coach one more. And
sure.
That'll probably take us to time.
Okay.
I've heard that it can take up to 5 years to feel relief from the loss. What are your thoughts on this? I lost my daughter 10 years ago and I still grieve for her several times a year.
Yeah. My thoughts are that the timing of this is like the biggest, most misleading, useless concept. Time has nothing to do with anything. It really doesn't. because what creates our feelings is our thinking. Our thoughts can change like that, or we can take a lot of time before we change our thoughts. But there is no amount of time that passes that magically changes our thoughts, right?
I totally agree.
Like, yeah, don't judge yourself for where you are on any sort of time frame, but also don't expect that time heals. It doesn't. Time just sits there.
Right. Like, time's not doing anything, but just ticking away. That's all that really happens. I think this is time, so useful because I think a lot of people think they're going to have a new thought and they're like, well, so tell me how long I can expect to keep thinking the old ones. And it's like, I don't know, for the rest of your life. That's my always my answer. I'm just like, plan on having it for the rest of your life and get okay with that part. And you'll never need it to go away ever again.
Yeah. I have a lot of people too that think there's something that we have kind of permeated in our culture, which is this idea that the first year is the hardest. And if we just get past the first year after a loss, that somehow it's all okay. And so a lot of people will just really grip very tightly and not really allow any of their feelings or look at any of their thoughts, but they'll just kind of cling to the hope of the calendar. And then they're so disappointed when they get to that 1 year mark and they expected that the switch would just flip and it didn't. And then they realize that it's actually not time.
This reminds me of when I had Logan. He like cried around the clock and I called the one person I knew that had a child. She's like, oh, 8 weeks. Like they just start sleeping better and everything. Mm-hmm. 8 weeks came and passed. At 10 weeks, I was calling her back crying. Like, is my baby broken? So like, everything has its own timeline, ladies. Through the night, it is months.
Time doesn't matter.
Let's do Kathy. You've had your hand up for a while now. You've been on here since about the beginning. Look how cute she looks in her little selfie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I like that shirt.
Let's get you unmuted.
Unmute.
There you go. All right. I'm going to mute me again, let Krista coach you. If I'm unmuted, then I'm going to talk.
Okay. What's going on, Kathy?
I've never done this before, so I'm a little nervous. I've had a lot of losses. I lost the father of my kids, my stepfather, my brother. My niece was 27. And this year I lost my mom a couple months ago. And so now I've been struggling in the program. And I realize it's because I'm like afraid to make, I've been isolating and I'm afraid. I'm afraid to make changes in work. And I'm afraid of losing someone else, basically. I lost my dog, and I'm afraid to get a new one. I'm afraid they're going to die, too. I'm afraid I'm going to die, you know, like, and I don't know how to get out of that fear because I'm so stuck in being able to, like, move forward. You know, as I get up, I walk, I meditate, I do all these things, I make plans, but I'm still, at the end of the day, just numbing out with food at night, isolating because I don't want to change and get out.
So
that fear.
I like to always play that out to the next level. Like when we're telling ourselves we're afraid of anything happening, what we're really afraid of is the feeling that we're going to have if that thing happens. Right. Now, of course, we have to understand and we know the model thoughts cause feelings. Right. So really what we're afraid of is that we're going to have a thought and it's going to cause a feeling. But the worst part of that for the human beings is the feeling. Right. So then we go, OK, what is that feeling that I worry that I would have? What is that feeling that I so desperately don't want? Do you know?
I guess on some level, I'm afraid to get close to people and have to go through, and maybe I haven't gone through the grief, especially with my mom. It's like easier just to stay alone than to try again, you know, whether it's, I don't know how to explain it, and it's just, I know I need to like be able to move forward and sort of mm-hmm. let it go and be okay. Like anything can happen today, tomorrow, tonight. Mm-hmm. My stepfather used to always say, it's a great day. I woke up this morning. Mm-hmm. And he was always larger than life. And I, that stuck with me, but because I don't know how to explain it. It's like I'm afraid to go make new friends or to change a job because, you know, it will, you know, just.
Yeah. Let me tell you what I'm guessing it is. And then you tell me if I'm on the right track. All right. We don't want to get close to other people. We don't want to do new things because we might feel the loss of that later if it changes.
Right. Exactly. Right?
So yeah. What we do is we feel it now. We create it now. It's like we isolate, which is what you said you're doing. We right. don't allow ourselves to, you know, accomplish our dreams or create our whatever it is that we're trying to create, right? Lose the weight. And mm-hmm. we just experience misery now because right. we're worried we're going to experience misery later.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. That yeah. is.
Right. So here's the answer. You know what it is?
What?
Be willing to experience misery. Whatever the emotion is, right? It's a even part if it's a human experience.
Okay.
It won't kill us. Like you don't want to feel lonely, but yet right now, how do you feel?
Yeah.
Right. But right now you're not really feeling it. Mostly you're pushing it away. You're trying to get away from it.
Yeah, I'm definitely doing that.
Which makes it so much worse. So much worse.
Right.
So you decide, okay, if loneliness is a part of life, what mm-hmm. if I just got better at feeling it and had a different experience of feeling it? What if I decided to let it be part of my human life?
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped arguing with it.
Right. Just like going through the feelings. Yeah.
Yeah. Letting them be part of life. Okay. The alternative is shrinking your life mm-hmm. and yourself. The alternative is eating your feelings. The alternative is not mm-hmm. doing anything new, growing at all, having new friends, creating new relationships. The alternative is shrinking.
Yeah. Which is what I've done. I mean, I overwork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Majority of my life is working and then, you know, the rest of my yeah. life is very small.
Yeah. And if it actually made us feel better, I might even be able to get behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't think you feel any better.
No, I don't. Not at all.
Right. So if we stop arguing with feelings and we just decide they're a part of life and we just open mm-hmm. up to them, they stop controlling us. We stop not taking risks and not making changes. Because we're worried about how we're going to feel, because we just decide we're willing to feel whatever it is. And actually, we're pretty good at it.
Mm.
Like we can handle it.
Yeah. I'm going to put that on one of the sticky notes.
Okay. I'm telling you, feelings, that's the answer to freaking everything. Corinne?
I love that you said you're going to put on a sticky note. I just wanted to let Krista know that we are sticky note warriors around here. We slap a sticky on everything. It's like, wait, let me write that on my sticky.
It's the best. Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
That was really good.
I hear that a lot too, where it's like, well, I've been in one relationship and I've lost it. So, mm-hmm. you know, that pain really hurt and I don't want to feel that pain again. Okay. Well, you're feeling the pain now, and then you prevent, if you're not willing to feel the low, you don't get the high.
Right.
And life is high and low. We don't have the highs without the lows. We don't even have any reference. They don't mean anything.
We once had an event where we were talking about, and Kathy, this might be helpful, just... Mm-hmm. A lot of times when people are really traumatized or hurt in their past in particular, they go through their current life, you know, building up walls, keeping people out so that they can't get hurt again. They to create a sense, like a faux sense of safety. And the only problem with when you build your walls is you keep out, like you're keeping out loneliness. You're keeping out some of that stuff sometimes, but you're also keeping out all the good stuff too. So like when we build walls to protect ourselves from perceived harm from other humans, we also keep out all the good people that are there, all the good experiences that can be had. So that's all a wall does is block you off from all of it. And we forget that there is that part because we are so afraid of this.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I like to think about it, like I imagine like a roller coaster that's high and low, right? Mm-hmm. And so we get the low lows and we get the high highs. And if we numb it down, we get like little baby ones, right? Which is good when it comes to like insulin. Like we would like that. But otherwise, like we don't have the highest of the good emotions that we want. And we also numb out the other emotions. And so everything just gets more dull. Right. And if you want to be a human with a rich life, that means that we got to drop the walls, which means we're going to have the higher highs and we're going to have the lower lows, but that's the richness and the depth and the brilliance, right? Like the saturated colors of emotions, as opposed to like the muted pastel ones.
Yeah. The watercolors. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
That's a good one for your first one.
Yeah. Right. Kudos to her.
I always love it when they come on. My coaching calls are like, I've been watching you for a long time.
I'm scared.
I'm so nervous. I'm like, I have not once slapped anyone or bit anyone. I don't know what they're talking about.
Only because of Zoom.
Right. Yes. I have live events and I haven't bitch slapped anybody. Last question. I think this is a good one. I have infertility. I feel grief over not having the life I wanted or envisioned at this point in my life. I'm ready to move on after several years, but I just don't know how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So again, allowing all the feelings, whatever they are, none of them are right or wrong, good or bad, but they are. And then is this a story you want to tell yourself going forward? Do you want to tell yourself that it should have happened differently, right? That you should have been able to have a baby in that way? And it's okay to keep that story. Again, it's not right or wrong, but it is arguing with what is, right? And whenever we argue with what is, there's no possible way we can win with that.
Right.
Or to like it either.
Right. There's one other, you said something and there's like a couple people asking, wait, what? You can decide that they are still here. How can you do that? They're gone. Please tell me more about that. It was like a little moment that you had. And now
You know, I experienced this in a very profound way. It was about a year ago. I was in Colorado with my daughter, and Hugo and I loved Colorado. It was kind of our happy place. My parents have a cabin there and we would go there. And Marissa and I, my daughter, she's 16 now. So she's probably 15 at the time. We were looking at the mountain view in the cabin. And I said, I wish Hugo was here. And she looked at me like I had two heads. And she said, Mama, he is here. And it just like sucker punched me that here is my, at the time, 15-year-old daughter who's feeling totally connected to him. Because she couldn't even contemplate that I would see it any other way. Her thought line is, he's here. My thought line is he's not, and I wish he was. And it's just two sides of a coin, and we can choose to think they're here or we can choose to think they're not. And we don't need permission. We don't need evidence. It's just a choice that we get to make.
I think that is a lot of people with their brains. Like we just somehow we rationalize that we can't experience all of those emotions that we want with that person simply because they're gone. And it's like, it's a thought that they're gone.
Yes. Yes.
Like your memories are intact. Any evidence that you want to find about them is intact. Anything you want to choose to think about them in any moment, it's intact and available. And we ignore all of that power and we ignore all of that love that we have available to us simply because we have this one killer thought of, well, they're they're gone.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's the disconnection that we create. Mm-hmm. And we think it's because they died.
Yeah. Yeah. This was so good, Krista. Seriously, the podcast is The Widowed Mom. Everybody,
Widowed Mom podcast.
Listen, subscribe, leave a rating and review. It always helps podcasters.
Yes, it so does.
She also, I love your Instagram account. You have an amazing, I just follow you. So I'm not, I think it's Life Coach Krista maybe.
Yep. At Instagram, it's Life Coach Krista. All the social stuff is coachingwithkrista.com. It's all there. If you just want to go there, you can find it all. But yeah, Life Coach Krista on Instagram. Say hello.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what people got out of it. Like message me or say something.
Y'all go to her. Like if you're on Insta, go to Instagram and leave her comments. And Judith, tell Sadie to repop the podcast she and I did together and for next week and let me leave a, let me write about her coming in here and doing our call. And then we will we'll send everybody over to leave comments and stuff and that way they can find you a lot easier and all that kind of stuff. And then everybody can see how helpful you are for us.
Good. I'm glad. I hope people got something out of it.
It was really good, Krista. I really appreciate it.
So. Well, thank you for the chance. All
right. Thank you. Bye.
Right. Bye.
All right, everyone. I just think that was amazing. We are trying to do a lot of new things for you guys by bringing in some experts. We're hosting very topical calls where you guys can we can stay focused and get some powerful help around certain things. So I hope you loved it. I will see you guys. What is today? Thursday. I will see you guys on Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Facebook for our Q&A this week. If you haven't heard, virtual camp is open for October. Get registered. We're going to blow it out like we did in July, even bigger. I believe there may be a DJ hired for the entire weekend. I'm just saying Corinne would like to have a DJ. So we're trying to work out all the audio for that. You guys have a good one. Bye, y'all.